much.
Yes, thank you very much, Estelle, for inviting me here. So, my first time in Canada. I mean, the last time I went to Seattle and I flew over Canada, I don't know if it counts, but yeah. I'm happy to be here. So, I will present today some of the work I've did in the past few years. And I hope to extend this within the direction of machine learning. So, Estelle is actually a good collaborator for this. Okay, so yeah, so I've been looking at noise-induced resonance phenomena in neurons, and I have been trying to understand how neurons can use noise to encode information and how effective. So we see that our brain is very effective. It has a high computational power because of the presence of noise. So experimental work have shown that noise is very useful. And here you can see a plethora of noise-induced phenomena. Of course, this one is a chaos-induced phenomena, but most of these phenomena are noise-induced phenomena that helps the brain to encode information effectively. So they are given here in order of occurrence of discovery. And most of these have been discovered experimentally or sometimes numerically only. And I wanted to have a more mathematical, a more rigorous mathematical analysis of this phenomenon. So today we are going to focus on two of them. I'm sorry. So on two of them. So we will focus on self-induced stochastic resonance and inverse stochastic resonance. And the question that my goal today is to establish the relationship between both, because experimental work have shown that the electrophysiology would take two identical neurons, and then they would perturb this neuron with identical noise, and they will see that this neuron will encode really different type of information. And it's quite surprising from a biological perspective, but from a mathematical perspective, you will see that it's quite understandable. Yeah. And then my second goal will be to build physics-informed reservoir computing based on liquid state machines. So, of course, in the neocortex or in the brain, there's noise everywhere. And reservoir computing is the most Bao-inspired machine learning algorithm that you have to train the synapses and the output layer only and not the reservoir itself. So I strongly believe that the prevalence of chaos and noise in the brain should enable the brain to encode information very efficiently. And therefore, I would like to see how we can use this phenomenon that we'll study rigorously mathematically into a machine learning algorithm and see how it can improve the machine learning algorithm or not. So, and this is what I'm starting to collaborate with Estelle. We are trying to look at this now and try to build such networks. Okay, so that's the goal. The short term and the long term goal. So this is the outline of my talk. We will present the physical Nagumo model, which is a model of mathematical neuron form model. We will look at self-induced stochastic resonance. What is it? How does it occur? We look at the second one, inverse stochastic resonance. We see how neurons can switch between the two, and then we will conclude. Okay, so let me present the model. So the physical Nagumo model is it's a slow, fast dynamical system that can be written in this form. So here you see you have a tau here, you have epsilon here, which is a very small parameter, which is a ratio of the slow and the fast time scale. Yeah. And this is a stochastic, so this is a Wiener process, a formal derivative of Brownian motion. And then you can recast this into a fast time scale t, and you see that here the epsilon is gone. So these two versions of the physical Nagumo model is topologically equivalent. So the solutions in the phase space are the same. The only difference is the speed at which you converge to add factors. So in this talk, I'm going to switch from one time scale to the other, so without affecting the generality of the analysis, because sometimes we will need to be on the slow time scale, and sometimes we need to be on the fast time scale, but they are topologically equivalent. Of course, this is a Wiener process, and I know that physicists would prefer to use the Strasbourgian calculus, but here I use the Itô calculus because these two calculi are the same if you are using white noise. So I will use that here. And yeah, so the vector field F here is given by the polynomial equation like this and G also. So I would like you to keep A in mind and C in mind. These parameters are very important. Epsilon and sigma, yeah? And that's the parameter space. And of course, sigma is the noise, white noise. So that's the model that we want to use. It's a neuron model. And V here represents the movement of the membrane potential that the neuron uses to encode information. And G here represents the movement of the ions across the membrane potential. So this is the model that we are going to use. And please keep the parameter A in mind, C in mind, epsilon in mind, very important ones. Okay, so now let me present the mathematics behind the analysis that we are going to do. So it's called geometric singular perturbation theory. And it says, which is like, so the physical NAGOMO is a slow, fast dynamical system that can be written in this form. And as I said, these two dynamical systems are topologically equivalent. And we can have the singular limit. So if you take epsilon tends to zero, then you can split the fast soft system into a one-dimensional system, and you can split the slow system into another system, which are not equivalent, but the full system are topologically equivalent. Okay. So when you take the singular limit, now we define some invariant manifold. So we have very important invariant set, which is called a critical manifold, which is actually the equilibria of the fast soft system and the phase space of the slow system. So for solutions to exist here, your initial conditions must be lying on the critical manifold. Yeah? And there's one very important property of the critical manifold is that it should be normally hyperbolic. So normal hyperbolicity here indicates that all trajectory, all points on the critical manifold will have attracting fibers. So in this case, P here will be, every P on the critical manifold here will be normally hyperbolic. So very important condition. And then of course, M is attracting if the Jacobian scalar is negative and repelling if it's positive. It could be of saddle type if some but not all are positive. And then we have what we call the fold point, very important, which is actually a generic folded singularity where the critical manifold loses normal hyperbolicity. Yeah. So these are very important definitions that we are going to use. So now,
I understand how this is a model of a neuron.
Sorry?
So why is it a neuron?
It is a neuron because it follows qualitatively the dynamics of neurons. So if you look at, if you measure the neuron like in the brain, you see you have some spiking activity or sometimes spike and burst.
And so if, what's the slow and fast part of that?
So if you integrate this equation of the physical NAGOMO, you will see that it can spike and burst. And of course, it doesn't blow to infinity because the slow part pulls the trajectory back around the critical manifold. So in the next slide, you will see exactly how you have the spiking. Now I just want to give the mathematics behind what I will present. So this is the theorem that we use to analyze the neuron. So if we have our physical NAGOMO model, so this theorem that was obtained in my PhD thesis says that if your critical manifold is normally hyperbolic, like the condition we saw, then there will be some part, yeah, there will exist some epsilon that is sufficiently small such that there exists an invariant adiabatic slow manifold. So you have your critical manifold and you have another manifold, which is a slow manifold, which is at the Hadoop distance of order epsilon. Yeah. And then the slow flow on epsilon converges, or the slow flow on that manifold converges to the critical manifold. And so maybe we'll use only the first three conditions here, but this is the full theorem. This other hypothesis will not be used in the analysis, but this is just the full theorem on slow fast dynamical system that we're going to use. Okay, so, and then of course here, the conclusions that hold for the critical manifold are the same for the slow manifold. Okay, so this is the mathematics that we're going to use. Now let's, yes, please.
How is discern between stable, unstable, and critical manifold? Because it seems to me that your definition of critical manifold is that the first derivative is zero.
No. The critical manifold is where the fast variable in the singular limit, the fast vector field is equal to zero, and where the derivative of this fast vector field is equal to zero corresponds to the fold point, which is a generic folded point.
So come back with me a little bit on your previous.
here?
Yes, so here your first point says critical manifold is when f is 0.
Right. And then at any other point on the critical manifold where you have normal hyperbolicity, so it attracts the trajectory, the Jacobian scalar should be non-zero.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it loses normal hyperbolicity at the fourth point where it's 0.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, of course, I don't want to prove the theorem here because it's not important. I just want to say, okay, this is the mathematics that we are using. So now let's go to the physical phenomenon that we want to study here. So, and then I will give a more precise answer to your question. So now self-induced stochastic resonance. So what is it exactly? So the question here is, can noise induce a limit cycle solution when the bifurcation parameter C is bounded away from the singular hop bifurcation? Yeah. So usually when you have a dynamical system, you can have periodic oscillations if the system can admit hop or saddle knot bifurcation. So for the Fisker-Nagumo, it is of type 2, which means that it admits periodic solutions only through hop bifurcation. So the question, if I bound my parameter away from the hop bifurcation so that it cannot oscillate, can I introduce noise such that I have periodic oscillations? So that's the question. Yeah. So to answer that question, we have to define the invariant set of the Fisker-Nagumo model. So you have your critical manifold, you have your fixed point, and you have your Fourier singularity. Yeah. So your critical manifold is defined by this cubic line here, right? And then the other nucleon where the second vector phi vanishes is defined by this green line. Yeah. And the intersection point corresponds to the fixed point of the critical of the system. So if I choose an initial condition here, I am attracted to this fixed point, yeah? And if there's no fixed point, then answering your question, I will move on the critical manifold. I will reach the fourth point. You see that here the tangent vector is not unique, so the uniqueness of differential equation fails, and you have a jump. And then you hit this part because they are monotonically increasing, so the Jacobian scalar is non-zero, so you have normal hyperbolicity. And then you are attracted here, and then you move here, and then here again it's not unique, and then you escape. And this is what would cause your spiking behavior. Yeah? So the neuron will actually spike because you are oscillating on these two parts of the critical manifold. So jumping from here to here and back corresponds to a spike of a neuron. Yeah, exactly. So now what we want to do is that, so of course, for the Fisker-Nagumo, the stable part corresponds to where the Jacobian scalar is negative. So this monotonically decreasing part corresponds to the normally hyperbolic part. So the trajectory will stick to that. You see that when there's an escape, it is attracted, it sticks to it, it moves up here and then also here. So for simplicity, we will consider a case where we have just one fixed point. Instead of three fixed points, we will just have one fixed point. And see that this fixed point, the fourth point is at -1, V is -1. And the fixed point is at -1.0 something. So it is located to the left of the fourth point. And because it's on the left of the fourth point, it means that it lies on this stable part of the critical manifold, and therefore it's stable. Yeah? But you will see at some point that it is possible to embed a stable fixed point on a critical manifold that is unstable, but that's for later. For now, we have the fixed point at this position and the fourth point at this position. So if I start an initial condition here, you see that as epsilon is changing, I am moving away from the critical manifold from the theorem. I will go around, and then I will come and stick to the fixed point. And because it's on the left, it's stable. And there are no oscillations. Yeah, there are no oscillations. And because I have bounded my C, which is a hop bifurcation parameter, at this value, so that my neuron cannot spike, cannot have oscillations, and there's no noise. Now the question is, how do I make it oscillate completely using noise? So if I introduce noise, then there are several things. The first thing is that on the critical manifold, if you look at the equation previously, maybe I go some step behind. For example here, you see that if I bring epsilon on the other side, I just have epsilon to the -1. Yeah? And if I take the singular limit, it tells me how the time scale at which I move on the critical manifold. So, back here. So there are two time scales in the system. There's the deterministic time scale at which I move on this normally hyperbolic part of the critical manifold, which is of order epsilon to the minus one. So if I take the singular limit as epsilon tends to zero, I will spend more time on the normally hyperbolic part of the critical manifold. For example, yes, so that's the first time scale. So the second time scale now is exponentially distributed. And you realize that if I take the singular limit, for example, on the first equation here, maybe I can show it here. Okay. If I take the singular limit here, then I have just one equation. Yeah, this is just a Langevin equation, which I can use the Fokker-Planck formalism to be able to calculate the first exit time from the stable part of the normally hyperbolic part of the critical manifold. And if you do that, you will see that they are exponentially distributed. Of course, this is because you have Gaussian white noise. If you have some other noise with heavy tails, like the Levy flight, they are polynomially distributed. You have to be careful with the type of noise you are using. But in the case of Gaussian white noise, they are exponentially distributed. So we have two time scales. The first time scale tells me how quickly I move on this part of the critical manifold, which I'm monotonically decreasing and therefore stable. And then I have one time scale which tells me how quickly I will jump away from this critical manifold. Well, that jump will correspond to a spike in the neuron. Yeah? So now I compare the time scale. So the first comparison is if epsilon, the deterministic time scale at which I move on the critical on the critical manifold, is shorter than the exponential or the stochastic time scale, then I don't jump. I will just stay on that critical manifold. And then I hit the fixed point, and because it is located to the left of the folder singularity, I cannot jump. And my fixed point is stable, so I stick to that point for a very long time. And you can see the time series that I have no oscillations. Yeah, I just stick there. Of course, if you wait long enough, you have some rare events, and you have a Poissonian distribution of spiking. But that's not what you want. You want regular spiking. You want a limit cycle. On the other side, if the deterministic time scale at which you move on the normally hyperbolic part of the critical manifold is longer than the escape time, then the trajectory will have time to escape. And you can see here that they escape quite quickly. Yeah, but the escape is very random. It's not periodic solution. What you want is a periodic solution induced by noise. And remember that if you remove the noise, because my fixed point is located to the left of the Fourier singularity, I cannot have jumps. The neuron cannot spike. It cannot encode information.
When they are like more or less, I mean, comparable.
Ah, that's a nice question, because that's actually what we are going to look now. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So now, if they are comparable, of course, this delta U is, if you solve the Fokker-Planck equation, you will have something like, I don't know if everyone can see, you have.
Maybe you can
choose another part. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you take a singular limit as epsilon tends to zero, then you will have just yeah. So this is a U here. So this U is actually a double wall potential that can be asymmetric. And it can be really symmetric. Yes, and then this quantity here, height. So this is this height here. And then here, the left is equal to the negative one. They are equal, they are symmetric. So that's this quantity here, and that's the noise. So if they are comparable, then it means that I can take the double limit of epsilon. So I have to move on the critical manifold very slowly. Yeah, and then I need to take the noise also very small, such that I do not overwhelm the dynamic stochastically, but such that I can jump almost surely at a fixed point here. So if, and to have that, I have to choose epsilon and sigma, both of them sufficiently small, such that this quantity, so half log sigma, half of sigma square log of epsilon to the minus one, have to be bounded in this interval where WE here is the W coordinate of the fixed point, and 3 over 4 here is the upper bound. It's the upper bound because at 3 over 4, your potentials are symmetric, and they are the largest. And because they are the largest, the probability of escape becomes very, very low, and you will have a Poisson sequence of spiking rather than a periodic solution. So 3 over 4 here imposes the upper bound. It's actually here. You see, if you take the potentials, they actually equal at 0 at something like 3 over 4. And then the second thing is that that limit has to be of order 1 so that the fixed point is below the escape point. The escape point is the W coordinate for which you are escaping. You see that if the escape point is below the fixed point, then you would hit the fixed point before escaping. And because the fixed point is stable, you get trapped by the basin of attractor and you cannot escape, and you have a Poisson sequence for spiking. So you will want that double limit is of order 1, and this will guarantee that you have this condition. And the second thing is that you want your escape point to be unique, because if it is not unique, for example, you have something, you have your critical manifold like this. Maybe at some point you escape here, then you go back and come back and escape here. You see that because of the non-uniqueness of the escape point, you will destroy the regularity of your solution. You want the solution to be unique. And the uniqueness of that solution is guaranteed by the monotonicity of the energy potential function in this interval. You see that, for example, W minus is the red one. You see that it's monotonic from minus 3 over 3 to 0, and the other one is also monotonic. Because of that monotonicity, you are almost sure to always escape at this point. And at this point here, where this is W plus. Yeah. Okay, you see that I almost escaped surely here, here, and then if you look at the time series, you see that I have a periodic solution here. So, and this is what is called self-induced stochastic resonance. I have a dynamical system that cannot oscillate periodically without noise. I introduce noise. Instead of noise destroying the periodicity, I use noise to actually improve the periodicity of the spiking. And the second thing is that I now shift my fixed point. Instead of it being to the left, I put it to the right of the fixed point, of the folded singularity. And then this blue trajectory is moving down. You see that it is moving on the critical manifold on the red curve because we're in the singular limit. It reaches the fold point. The tangent is no longer unique. The existence of the solution fails, and it jumps. Now let's compare the oscillations when your fixed point is located to the right of the fold point when it's located to the left, and you have self-induced stochastic resonance. This is a time series. You see that they are not exact. The spiking times are different. Yeah? And in neurons, it is not the amplitude of the spike that encode the information, but the spiking time. And you see that just by changing the relative positioning of the fixed point to the fold point, the neurons is already encoding two different types of information. Yeah? So this is a phenomenon of self-induced stochastic resonance. And that's the analysis of it. And the last thing I want to show about it is this is coefficient of variation. So the coefficient of variation is a measure that tells you how regular the oscillations are with the noise. You see that here it's very low. The lower it is, the more regular you have solution. You see that you can actually tune your noise the way you want without affecting the regularity of the oscillation. That's why in your brain, despite the amount of perturbations and noise and whatever you can have in your environment, your brain is still capable of doing a certain task. So far as the ambient noise is within this interval. But if it becomes too loud, then maybe you cannot focus on the task, or maybe too low. But within this interval, you have some sort of homeostasis. So the brain can still do well even though the noise is changing. Okay. Yes, you don't have a network, but this result extends to network. There's a paper that shows that this also persists when you have a network. Yeah. Okay. So there's a detour here that I will not dwell too much on it. So there are these papers have shown that in the brain, synchronization and noise-induced phenomena, which the brain uses to encode informations, usually becomes better if you introduce diversity. So if the neurons are not exactly the same, then you can usually improve the information processing of the brain. And these papers have shown it. But in this paper here, we show that for self-induced stochastic resonance, it's actually impossible for you. So I will not show the details, but I will just give you a reference. Here we show that using mean field analysis that diversity cannot improve information encoding in neurons the way it does for other noise-induced resonance phenomena. So that's just a detour. Now, so one last detour that I want to explain is that the brain can encode with noise through a phenomenon of coherence resonance, where noise induces regularity. Yeah? And through coherence resonance, you would need your system to satisfy these conditions for the brain to encode information in that way. But for self-induced stochastic resonance, which is still encoding information with the same type of noise, the brain has to satisfy different other conditions. And you can see that just by changing simple parameters in the brain, like for example, epsilon will tell you the difference between the V and the U, can already force your brain to encode different type of information. And usually the mathematics are very precise. It shows you exactly where to fine tune your parameters.
Yeah, but how do you do it,
experimentally?
I mean, yeah, because for the noise, the epsilon
it depends. So you see that the epsilon tells you the time difference between the V variable and the W variable. And the V variable is the membrane potential, and the W variable is the movement of the ion across the membrane potential. So for example, if you shorten the axon of a neuron, which today can be done well in surgery, that's doable, it's done, yeah? If you shorten that, then you will reduce the area, the surface area of the neuron. And if you reduce the surface area of the neuron, you reduce the amount of channel noise. And if you reduce the amount of channel noise, your W here becomes even faster, you can increase that time scale.
I see.
So it's doable.
Okay, so your epsilon is, but no, I mean, in principle, epsilon should be independent of W, right?
No. So epsilon is just a parameter that tells you that I want V to be faster than W and how fast. The larger epsilon is, the closer the speed of W is to V, and the smaller epsilon is, the slower ones to each other. So by reducing the surface area of the neuron, you reduce the ions, and therefore you can increase the speed of W. Yeah. Okay, so, and then this is a case of the network where we did the same analysis for a network and the result persisted, yeah? So maybe I don't go into that. And yeah, so this is another work. So in this other paper, we showed the result with static, there was not spike time dependent plasticity, there was not learning within the neuron. Now, when we introduced the learning within the neuron, we show that the brain can encode in different ways. So instead of using self-induced stochastic resonance to encode information, it uses coherence resonance, just because we introduce some learning role into it. Okay, so let's go to the second and last part of the talk, where we look at the other phenomenon, which is inverse stochastic resonance. So now the question here is, so in the previous case, we used noise to create a limit cycle solution. And the question here is, can we use noise to like kill a limit cycle solution? These are things that have been observed. Okay, so the answer is yes. So what do? We take the Fisk-Nagumo model that I presented in the beginning, and then we choose some initial condition, and we notice that there's no oscillation. So it just dies down, there's no oscillations. We change the initial conditions here, but there's still no noise, and then the oscillation persists. So from a dynamical system point of view, it shows that there are two stable attractors, a fixed point and a limit cycle. Now, I take this condition where I have a limit cycle, I introduce some noise, and instead of noise improving the oscillation, it kills. So imagine that you have an oscillator, and then you perturb the oscillator with noise, and instead of the oscillator oscillating more, it oscillates less. Yeah, and then you say, okay, I want more oscillation, so I increase the perturbation, but the oscillator is even oscillating less and lesser. And if you increase to some higher value, then it oscillates. So this non-monotonic behavior in the firing rate of neuron is what is called inverse stochastic resonance. And yes, it was numerically discovered in this paper. Yeah? And then it was experimentally confirmed in this paper. But a rigorous mathematical analysis of the phenomenon is still lacking, yeah? Which is what we will present here in a moment. So the first thing is to see how we can establish this bistability between the fixed point and the limit cycle. So I will not take you through this bifurcation analysis, which is very nice because it shows you mathematically how you can embed a stable point on a critical manifold that is unstable. But I will not go into that. The only important thing is this equation. So you have to choose your A and C such that your fixed point is located to the left of the fold point, but it's less than this quantity. If you do that, you see that your fixed point, which is here, is located to the left, but it's still stable. So if I choose an initial condition here, I stay within this space of attraction. But if I choose it elsewhere, then I will go on the limit cycle solution. Yeah. So if you do a bifurcation analysis, you see that you can have a fixed point and a stable limit cycle, and by topological necessity, you have an unstable limit cycle between them. Yeah. And you see that that bistability occurs within a very thin interval, parameter interval of epsilon, which is not longer in the singular limit. You see that epsilon is relatively large. Yeah. It's not like in the first phenomenon where you took the singular limit, which is epsilon close to zero. Okay, so now I stay within that interval of bistability from the lowest value to the highest value. Yeah. Now, the vertical axis represents the number of spiking, the number of information encoding, and this is noise. Now, let's focus on the red lines, yeah, on the red lines of each of these. You see that the number of spiking is high when the noise is small. As the noise is changing, you have a non-monotonic behavior that becomes very pronounced as you are increasing epsilon. You see that it becomes deeper and deeper and deeper. That is self-induced stochastic resonance. And this red line corresponds to when your initial conditions are chosen from the basin of attraction of the limit cycles. Now look at the blue lines. The blue lines correspond to when the initial conditions are chosen from the basin of attraction of the stable fixed point. You see that it increases and then decreases. So you have that non-monotonic behavior here, but at some point it increases without bound. Yeah? You don't have, it just monotonically increases and here and here and also here. And this is what is observed numerically, but here we present a mathematical understanding of this. So a formal understanding of this will be based on the Fokker-Planck formalism. But the problem is that we are not longer in the singular limit. Epsilon is relatively large, and therefore you cannot. The Fokker-Planck equation for a two-dimensional dynamical system is a hard problem. But there's a link between the quasi-potential function and the probability and the stationary probability density of the Fokker-Planck equation. But still here, you have to solve the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, which is a hard problem for a two-dimensional dynamical system. So we went to a heuristic method where we say, okay, if you have a particle in the domain, then the first exit time of this particle will depend on how large the domain is, and it will depend on how sensitive the particle is to stochastic perturbation. Okay, and so to do that, we have to use a certain metric that is called the stochastic sensitivity analysis and the Mahalovic metric. So what's the Mahalovic metric, which is this metric given here? It is like the Euclidean metric that you have in geometry, like the distance between two points, but it takes into account the covariant metrics of the stationary probability density of the attractors. Yeah, here is for the fixed point, the stable fixed point, and there is for the stable limit cycle. So for us to characterize the first exit time, we have to calculate the eigenvalues and the eigenvectors of these covariant matrices. The largest eigenvector, the eigenvalue will tell you how sensitive the attractor is to stochastic perturbation, while the eigenvector of that largest eigenvalue will tell you the direction. So for example, if I'm a particle, I may be here, this is the boundary. A perturbation can just spin me around. I might spin here for a very long time without hitting the boundary, even though I'm very close to it. Or maybe I am at the center of this hole, very far from the boundary, and the stochastic force is pushing me directly to the boundary. So I can take lesser time, even though I'm farther away from the boundary, than when I'm here and the stochastic perturbation is harmonic. Yeah. So the Mahalovic metric is that nice metric that will tell you, hey, this is your minimal distance from that boundary, and that is the direction in which you are the most sensitive to the stochastic perturbation. So we have to calculate these covariant matrices for the fixed point and the stable limit cycle. Yeah?
So I kind of, so this
Mahalovic metric.
Metric?
Yeah.
Is it a, what is distance here? Is it between probabilities? Is it
yeah, so the Mahalovic metric is the distance between a point and a distribution of point.
Okay.
Yeah, and this point here will correspond to your attractor, while the distribution of point will correspond to your separatrix, the separatrix between the basin of attractions.
Okay. Yeah.
So, of course, now we have stable attractors, and therefore the Lyapunov exponent, their largest Lyapunov exponents, will satisfy an algebraic equation for the fixed point and a matrix differential equation for the limit cycle. But unfortunately, for the Fisker-Nagumo, the covariant matrix is singular. So there was not much we could do here. But we could use one geometric property. So you see that the Fisker-Nagumo is two-dimensional. And so the Poincaré section onto the limit cycle is simply a tangent line to the limit cycle. And we can use that geometric property to actually prove that the covariant matrix of the limit cycle will satisfy this set of bound initial value problems, yeah, which we can easily calculate. And then my Mahalovic metric is given by this equation, which now I can calculate, and then now we explain the results. So on this first panel, we have our epsilon within that bistability regime. This is the Hope bifurcation, and that's the solenoid bifurcation. And this epsilon max tells you how sensitive is the fixed point and the limit cycle. Now let's look at the red line. You see that the limit cycle becomes very sensitive as you are moving closer to the saddle point. You see that it blows to infinity. Just like today at lunch, you were talking about the variance or the second moment changing when you have when you approach tipping points. Yes, the same. Yeah. So it seems like the fact that the second moments of data changing or approaching zero usually indicates some phenomenon. And here also it happens. You see that it increases without bound, which is like a variance, when you are approaching the saddle point. And the fixed point also becomes very sensitive when you are approaching this the Hope bifurcation. Okay, this is a sensitivity. It tells you how sensitive you are to the stochastic perturbation. Now here's a Mahalovic metric, which tells you your distance from the boundary that you want to hit and the direction in which you are the most sensitive to hitting that boundary. And you see that for the fixed point, it increases, and for the limit cycle, it decreases as you are moving towards this saddle node bifurcation. So now, how does this analysis explain the phenomenon of inverse stochastic resonance? So let's look at the red line. You see that if I'm closer to the fixed point here, to the Hope bifurcation, my limit cycle is not very sensitive, and the Mahalovic distance is very high. That's why the jumping phenomenon is not very pronounced here. But if I move towards the southern node here, where its sensitivity becomes very high and the distance becomes very low, then the first exit times becomes very short. And you see that you can move from 100, immediately you shoot to almost zero before you increase. And the same explanation goes for the fixed point. Yeah. So here is the explanation of both phenomena, and now we can have some conclusion here. So my aim was to be able to explain the experimental observation where you have neurons that are identical and you have the same stochastic perturbation, but they encode different information. Yeah? In the first situation, we study self-induced stochastic resonance, and for the Fisker-Nagumo, you have to satisfy these conditions for it to occur. And you can switch from self-induced stochastic resonance to inverse stochastic resonance within the same stochastic perturbation simply by changing epsilon. Here you are in singular limit and here you are not. And then here by changing the relative positioning of the fixed point compared to the fourth point of the critical manifold. Yeah. So if you do that, then your neuron can switch from encoding this type of information or whatever is encoding here to encoding information here. Yeah, just by switching epsilon from the singular limit and then by changing the relative positioning of the fixed point, which biologically will just be essentially changing the quiescent state of neurons. So instead of the neuron resting at, for example, in the brain neuron usually rests at -75 millivolt, if you could change that maybe to -65, then that same neuron will be encoding different type of information in your brain. Okay, so now let's look at open problems. So the next thing that I would want to do is to extend the mathematical analysis to heavy processes. In this case, you don't longer have an exponential distribution of the first exit time, but the distribution is polynomial. And also look at Ostein-Uhlenbeck processes where you have temporal correlations, and also maybe Poisson dichotomous noise. So these are different types of noise that have different stochastic properties. And of course, the first escape time should be different and the mechanism should be different. So, but the mathematical analysis are still lacking, and I'm still working on that. And the second part, which I'm not very interested in, is how to apply this. So as you saw from the papers, there are experimental papers that have shown that this phenomenon really improves, especially this paper, that they really showed that the phenomenon really improves this one.
Yeah,
that inverse stochastic resonance improves optimal information transport in neurons. Yeah, so for me, I have the strong feeling that we can try to see whether this is true from a machine learning perspective. And so
far.
Yes. So my aim now with Estelle is to try to apply this in bio-inspired machine learning. So we have like a reservoir like this where we have neurons. And in each of these neurons, we fix their parameter following the mathematical analysis that I presented. Yeah, such that this reservoir has a certain degree of self-induced stochastic resonance or inverse stochastic resonance and synchronization, and try to see the efficiency of the reservoir when you have this physical phenomenon occurring here. So we can inject any degree of physics that we want here and try to see how well the machine learning algorithm will perform. And I think that reservoir computing is the best machine learning approach to use, because you don't have to train the weights, the synapses inside. You only train the output layers. And we saw in some papers that the current resonance depends on the configuration of the spike time dependent plasticity. So we can impose whatever type of physics that we want here and try to see how it helps. So we can introduce chaos, we can introduce inverse stochastic resonance or whatever, and try to see what degree of that physical phenomenon, how it affects the performance of the machine learning algorithm. And so I'm not a machine learning person, so I think that Estelle should be a good person, and also maybe some of you here to help with this. And so I think that's it. So yes, the paper where we really show this mathematical analysis more carefully, so you can have a look if you want. And I would like to thank the funding for my research. Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Questions?
So I hope that I could answer your question.
I was going to ask, so is there typical data for like neuron output that you're matching your models to? Like any parameters in your models between?
So the Fisku-Nagumo model that I use has been already, so people obtain this model by fitting parameters. Yeah. So the models really fit. It's not the best model. There's this model called Hodgkin-Huxley, which is the Nobel Prize winning equation in biophysics. So it's really precise. So depending on the type of neuron that you take, you can just tune the parameter and it will capture that dynamics precisely. But the model is high dimensional and the parameter space is large. Mathematical analysis are difficult. But the Fisku-Nagumo is simpler, but at the expense of biophysical accuracy. I mean, the analysis I showed here, you cannot just try with Hodgkin-Huxley, because strongly nonlinear, high dimensional, large parameter space, and it's harder. Yeah. But it's more precise. Yeah. But the Fisku-Nagumo can at least capture one of the dynamics precisely, which is that of spiking. Other type of bursting chaos, it cannot do that. But for the spiking that you also see in the brain, it does that very well. Yeah.
Cool.
questions?
Okay.
I have a question for the epsilon. The epsilon between the fixed point and then the limit cycle. Is there a time scale? Because previously, so when we should show the double well potential. So there was, and when you showed the time scale between having slow motion of ions in between the axon and the one of the noise, that I understand that when the two time scale becomes comparable, then you have an escape.
Yeah.
But for this one, what are the time? Are there time scales?
No, here they're not time scale because epsilon is not longer in the singular limit. You see, it's larger. In this case, the time scale between W and V is not that large, so you cannot neglect the second variable.
But then what does those numbers mean? Is there not a physical?
So which number? Epsilon, you mean, or what do you
mean?
Yeah,
the epsilon.
So epsilon, the physical meaning of epsilon is the times is the how is measured how quickly is V is to W. Yeah, the smaller epsilon is, the slower, the larger is the time scale between V and W. And it's, the larger it is, the V and W are almost comparable.
Okay, so now is the time scale between the membrane potential and the motion of the ions across the axon.
It's a ratio of it. It's a ratio of it, yeah. It's a comparison how quickly it is, yeah. So if you look at the definition of epsilon in the beginning, not sure where it is. Yeah, it can be written like this, where this is a very small and this is very large. So if you even focus on just one equation, you see that if epsilon becomes very small here, then this velocity is very large compared to this one. Or if you can look at here, if epsilon becomes very small, this vanishes almost. But if epsilon becomes larger, then this becomes of almost order one to each other. Yeah. So it just measures the speed of W compared to V. Yeah. So, but mostly, the analysis are rigorously done, and so in the reservoir computing, we can just pick from the analysis here and then fix our reservoir and inject how much phenomenon we want into it, and then try to see the performance on prediction or forecasting or something like that. You know? And then, I have the strong feeling that the brain should synergistically use this phenomenon to be as efficient as it is. And I would like to test it really like this. Yeah, so.
Sounds good. If there's no other question, I stand by.
Yeah, thank you.